most boys, I wasn't always perfect growing up. I know it's hard to believe, but I wasn't always perfect, especially when Dad wasn't around or when just Mum and the siblings were around. And I would get up to some mischief and Mum would say, "Ian, stop doing that." And I would ignore her and she would say, "Ian Whitfield, stop doing that." And maybe I heard her, maybe I didn't. And she would say, "Ian Charles Alexander Whitfield, stop doing that." And anybody within earshot stopped doing what they were doing after that mouthful. Well, sometimes she could sense that my mischief was more teasing than misbehavior. So she would say something like this, "Ian, do you love me?" And I would ignore her and she'd say, "Ian Whitfield, do you love me?" Well, maybe I'd heard her, maybe I hadn't. And then she would say, "Ian Charles Alexander Whitfield, do you love me?" And I'd stop what I was doing, and I'd turn to her and say, "Mom, you know that I love you." Well, this morning's reading has some parallels to that faint memory of mine from my childhood. Something about that particular question, asked three times, and given to me through my unique name, that caused me to pay attention and to obey my mom a little bit more than I might otherwise do. Last week, we effectively started a sermon series for the summer. Those of you who are attending regularly will know we've asked you for questions that you'd like us to cover over the summer period, and that's what we're going to do. Last week, Michael Bradford answered the question, "Is it possible? Can you lose your salvation?" Well, that sermon was supposed to be this week to kick off the sermon series, and this week's sermon was supposed to be last week. And again, those of you that have been around the church for a while will know that we have been studying a book of the Bible for 20 months. What book would that be? So we are going to have to ask ourselves a question this morning to make it work with a sermon series. So the question that Doug Simpson came up with, I thought a little irreverently myself, but this is the title of the sermon, first edition. Are we ever going to finish the Gospel of John? And the answer to that question is yes, this morning we're going to finish the Gospel of John. And as we do that, I was asking the Lord whether we could somehow finish the Gospel of John, the last 11 verses of this great gospel, and at the same time ask a question that might have been asked by someone. No one actually asked this question, but maybe a question that is relevant. I came up with the sermon title, "Do You Really Have to Love Jesus?" Do you really have to love Jesus? And I think it's a question that resides somewhere deep within each and every one of us. It's not enough to know God, is it? It's not enough to know of his salvation, is it? We have to love him as well. So that's the question. Do we have to love him, or can we just receive the good news of salvation and know about him? Now, perhaps you women find it easy to love Jesus. Those of us men, those guys among us, have a harder time singing some of the songs that we sang this morning, maybe even, about how much we love Jesus. Now, today's text forms part of a story that we started reading back in April. And it's often referred to as the restoration of Peter. Now, you'll remember that Peter needed to be restored because he had boasted on the night before Jesus was crucified that even if every other disciple were to leave Jesus, he would not. And Jesus set him straight by telling him that before the cock crowed, he would deny Jesus three times. And that's what happened. Peter denied Jesus three times, the cock crowed, and Peter left the scene ashamed and wept bitterly, according to the scriptures. Jesus went through his mock trial, he was crucified, and he died. And on the third day, he rose again. And John tells us that he met with his disciples twice before this incident. This is the third meeting with the disciples. And the story goes that the disciples, many of the disciples, not all of them, chose to go fishing. They went out fishing. And they fished all night. Some of them at least were commercial fishermen, but they caught no fish. And as they moved back towards the shore in the morning, a stranger from the shoreline shouted out to them, "Cast your net on the right-hand side." And within a few minutes, they had hauled in 153 fish, they'd recognized Jesus, and they had breakfast with him. And that's where we will pick up the story this morning. John chapter 21, verses 15 through 25. When they'd finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Feed my lambs." He said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And he said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go." This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, "Follow me." Well, Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them, the one who had also leaned back against him during the supper and had said, "Lord, who is that? Who is it that is going to betray you?" Now, when Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, "Lord, what about this man?" And Jesus said to him, "If it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me." So the saying spread abroad among the brothers that this disciple was not to die. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he was not to die, but, "If it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you?" This is the disciple who is bearing witness about these things and who has written these things. And we know that his testimony is true. Now, there are also many other things that Jesus did. Were every one of them to be written, I suppose that the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. This is the word of the Lord. These are the last 11 verses of John's Gospel. So we pick up the story after breakfast. It's a little unclear as to whether or not the encounter between Jesus and Peter is done in front of other disciples, but it would seem, at least initially, that that was the way it was. Jesus asked Peter the same question three times, "Do you love me?" And he addresses him with the same name that he first used when he first met Peter, back in John chapter 1, verse 42. Simon, son of John, is how he referred to Peter when he first met him, for that indeed was his name. Now you'll remember that Jesus gave this Simon, son of John, a new name, and that name was Peter, which means the rock. So why in this instance, at the very end of the story, does Jesus choose to use Simon, son of John, as that reference, rather than Peter, the rock? Well, some commentators have suggested that that name was no longer worthy to be used to call Peter rock, given that he had denied Jesus three times. But perhaps it was more like my mom identifying me by name uniquely, Ian Charles Alexander Whitfield. I prefer to believe that Jesus wasn't really saying anything about the name Peter, but rather trying to bring Peter's original identity, his original name, to a place of a new beginning, of forgiveness, of restoration, of recommissioning, a chance, as it were, to start again. So Jesus asks the question, "Do you love me more than these?" That's the first way in which he asks the question, "Do you love me?" Do you love me more than these? So who are the these that Jesus is referring to? Well, those of you who have heard sermons on this passage before may have heard various possibilities. I'll cite three. First of all, Jesus could have been asking if Peter loved him more than the business of fishing, more than these, the boats and the nets and the fish. It's a possibility, isn't it? But I don't think that Jesus is asking Peter to compare his love with fishing or for fishing with the one who just died and risen from the dead. And I don't think he was asking a man who had, upon seeing Jesus on the shoreline and finally recognizing him, jumped off the boat and swam vigorously for shore. He could have been saying that, but I think it's not that one. A second possibility is this, that Jesus could have been asking if Peter loved him more than he loved the other disciples? Did he love him more than he, Peter, loved the other disciples? Is it really likely that there's some kind of competition for the affection of Peter between Jesus and the other disciples? We don't see any mention of this anywhere in the Gospels. We don't see that kind of striving in Peter's heart. And again, I would cite the specific action that we would have just read about if we'd read the first half of the story, that upon seeing Jesus, he left all those other disciples, plunged into the water, and made for the shoreline. The third possibility is that Jesus was asking if Peter loved him more than the other disciples loved Jesus. Do you love me more than these disciples love me? And I think this is the one that makes the most sense. Not because Jesus lines us up against a wall and compares one person's affection for him against another. No, this has to do with an allusion back to Peter's boasting before Jesus' death. Matthew tells us in chapter 26, verse 33, Peter said these words, "Though they all fall away because of you, I will never fall away." So Peter himself was the one who raised the comparator, the comparison between his loyalty and his love and his affection against those of the other disciples. And Jesus was bringing Peter back to his boasting and his subsequent denial. Well, why did he do that? He had to. It was the proverbial elephant in the room. Peter had left the denial scene weeping and ashamed. It must have been haunting him. And he had seen Jesus twice before without any reference to it. So Jesus was bringing him back, I think, to that night before his death, to that denial by Peter. And he asked the question three times, I think, in parallel to the three denials that Peter had committed. Now, again, those of you who've been around the church will know that when you look at the Greek text for the word love in "Do you love me?" in these three questions, perhaps some of you will know that the first two times Jesus asked the question, he uses the word for love, agapeo. "Do you agapeo me?" would be how it might be cited. And Peter responds in the first and the second time with a different Greek word for love, and that Greek word is phileo. So Jesus asks, "Do you agapeo me?" And Peter responds, "Lord, you know that I phileo you." And a lot has been made of this particular migration, because by the time the third question is asked, Jesus says, "Well, Peter, do you phileo me?" And he says, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I phileo you. I love you." There's been a lot of discussions. I've heard personally some sermons on these very themes. But I think this is overstated for the following reasons. Number one, Jesus wasn't speaking Greek. He was speaking Aramaic, or more likely, or as likely, Hebrew. And in both Aramaic and Hebrew, there is no distinction in the word for love. So why does John do this? Well, the second thing that I'm reliably informed by commentators is that this is a stylistic preference that John uses when there's a lot of repetitive words. So he uses different words that mean the same thing. It's a stylistic diversity more than a didactic or a teaching device. That may not convince you, it may not convince me, but I think the third one is perhaps the most important. You see, if the distinction is as important as it might seem to be, it would mean that Jesus was eventually forced to make a concession given that Peter didn't get it, because he kept using the word phileo. So it goes something like this. Jesus would be asking Peter if he loved him with agapeo love, and twice he asked the question and twice he got a response. It was something less than agapeo love. You see, agapeo love is a sacrificial kind of love, and phileo love is a brotherly kind of affection. There's different standards within what those words mean. And so Jesus sort of gives up and says, "Well, I'm not getting through to him. He doesn't seem to understand that what I'm looking for is agapeo love. I'll join him and say, 'Do you love me with phileo love?'" That doesn't seem likely to me, because it would not be in the style of Jesus to give up on a teaching moment, would it? would we not have understood him to explain to Peter why it was important to love him with a different kind of love? So I arrive at the conclusion that what was intended here was simply, as we would read it in our text, three questions asking the same exact thing. Do you love me? Do you love me? And he asked the question three times in order to draw that parallel to the three denials. So what was Jesus asking? He was asking simply this: do you love me? Now let me ask you a question. For whose benefit was Jesus asking the question? Was Jesus seeking the answer to a question to which he did not know the answer? Was Jesus somehow insecure and needing affirmation, uncertain as to whether Peter really loved him, and so he needed to hear it three times to become convinced? Or was Jesus asking it like my mom asked me the question, to remind me that I loved her? Well, of course, that was it. Jesus was helping Peter to recognize where discipleship and leadership begins, with love for Jesus. Of course, Jesus knew the answer. Peter tells Jesus that he knew the answer. Three times he responds with the same response. Jesus, Lord, you already know the answer. You know that I love you. So Peter was being required by the Lord to give voice to his love for Jesus in order for Peter to understand something. To understand that all relationship, all obedience, all discipleship, all service, all commissioning, all ministry begins with love for Jesus. Peter says, you know that I love you, Lord, three times. And how does Jesus then respond three times? Each time Jesus responds to Peter's declaration of love with the same mandate: feed my lambs, tend or shepherd my sheep, feed my sheep. Well, what's all that about? Well, those of you who know John's gospel will know that Jesus talks about himself being the shepherd of the sheep, and the sheep are those that belong to Jesus. So we would understand this to be a reference to believers, to those that would make up the soon-to-be established church, whether young in faith, the lambs, or those that are mature in faith, the sheep. It was important for Peter to be commissioned to become a leader in that soon-to-be established church on the basis of his love for Jesus. The role of the leader was to be born out of love for Jesus and expressed in nurture and care and teaching and love of the people of God. Do we really need to love Jesus? Isn't it enough to know him? Isn't it enough to understand and accept his message of grace? Do we really need to love him? Well, elsewhere in the Gospels, we read of a time when the Jewish leaders, experts in the Old Testament law, sought to test Jesus with the question, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And Jesus answered by saying, "The most important one is." The most important one is. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, and with all of your soul, and with all of your mind, and with all of your strength. Now he went on to add a second: your neighbor as yourself. But there's no confusion there, is there? If you were to summarize everything that was understood to be God's law in the Old Covenant, the Old Testament, what was the summary statement that was more important than any other? To love God with all of who we are. Now, you'll be glad to know I'm not going to give a summary overview of the whole of the book of John this morning. We would be here for a while. We'd need a picnic break, I'm sure, cookout or something. But I do want to highlight this, that prior to chapter 14, from John chapter 1 through John chapter 14, Jesus' teaching was to explain that if you knew Jesus, you knew the Father. If you'd seen Jesus, you'd seen the Father. That was the burden of his teaching. And then in chapter 14, among his disciples, he began to move the conversation to a new emphasis, from knowing him to loving him. That love is a prerequisite to following Jesus. I want to read three verses out of John chapter 14. Jesus says, "If you love me," talking to his disciples, "if you love me, you will keep my commandments. He says it the other way around in verse 21. Whoever has my commandments and keeps them, he it is who loves me. And again in verse 23. If anyone loves me, he will keep my word. I have news for you. You will not obey Jesus unless you love him. Knowing him is not enough. Understanding his gift of salvation is not enough. Comprehending who he is and what he has done will not lead you to obey his commandments. Only love for him will translate into obedience, into following him, into living for him. Now we move out of chapter 14, back to chapter 21. In this encounter, Peter cannot be commissioned to lead the church without first understanding that it all starts with his love for Jesus. Do we really have to love Jesus? Certainly we must. Or we will never obey him. We will never follow him. We will never live for him. So Jesus asks the same question three times. Peter answers with the same answer three times. And Jesus gives him the same mandate three times. Now note that immediately thereafter in verse 18, Jesus goes on to tell Peter that this professed love for Jesus will this time indeed continue all the way to the very point of Peter's death. Let me read it. Truly, 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 I say to you. When you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. Then John helpfully, parenthetically tells us that this was to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. So immediately after these triplets have taken place where Peter's love has been confessed and professed, it's validated immediately by Jesus, telling him that when he's old, he will indeed suffer martyrdom for the sake of Christ. And every commentator virtually understands that this notion of spreading out your hands and being led where you didn't want to go would have been understood by the readers of the time to mean crucifixion. There's non-scriptural historical documentary support that Peter was crucified in AD 68. Jesus knew that Peter's love would be tested again, but this time he would not deny Jesus. And after saying that, he says these two words, follow me. Peter was asked to love Jesus and to lead Jesus' church by following him. Now, quite honestly, this is quite a jumpy text to read. You have to stay with the program to figure out who's saying what to whom. And I think it's possible to rather quickly jump over, follow me. But he says it again to Peter in verse 22. So there's follow me in verse 19 and follow me in verse 22. And sandwiched between those two exhortations is a sort of a strange twist in the storyline. In verse 20, John tells us that Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. When Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, what about this man? And a part that I didn't read was just John's sort of way of referring to himself so that we would understand that he was talking about John. Lord, what about this man? So by this time, at least, the scene has changed a little bit from a group of men around a breakfast fire to somehow enough distance being established such that Peter could turn around and look back at John. And upon seeing John, he asks Jesus a question. He asks him to tell him what's going to happen to John. It's a strange twist in the narrative from my point of view, but I think it is worth spending a moment on. I think it's fairly clear what's happening here. Peter's just been told what? He's going to be told what's going to happen to him in the future and that he would die for his faith. And then at the same time, he sees this brother John and he says to himself, well, what's going to happen to him? You've told me everything that's going to happen to me. What's going to happen to him? And you'll recall Jesus' answer is both direct and, at least to my ears, a little tough. Jesus said to him, if it is my will that he remain until I come, what is that to you? Follow me. So Jesus is saying he need not concern himself with what was going to happen in John's life, but what was going to happen to him, and to focus on what he was being told to do. I think we're a bit like Peter, aren't we? Perhaps we only want to obey if there are others who are asking being asked to be obedient in the same way. Perhaps we have a little envy in the way God treats others in the kingdom. Maybe some of us have a little spiritual gift envy. Perhaps we get distracted from what we're supposed to do by checking in on how others are doing. And worst of all, perhaps we think we know what God wants for a fellow believer better than he or she does, or better than God does. We're not unlike Peter. I believe one of Satan's chief ploys is to have us distracted by what God is doing or not doing with other believers, or how others are doing in their followership of Jesus. And most of you know that in 2009, we planted Genesis over in Woburn. Genesis just moved into a new building. You should go and check it out. I got to spend some time with Michael Davis this week and saw the new building. Along the way, Michael told me several stories of incredible, I guess, God sightings, we would call them. Just amazing things that God is doing and has done on behalf of Genesis as they move from one building to another. If we had more time, I would tell you some of those things. On that particular night, I woke up in the middle of the night excited by what I heard. But I found myself musing. And gradually my sentiment began to change to a striking tinge of envy. And the more I thought about it, the louder it grew. And I asked the Lord what to make of all this. This comparison between how he was blessing Genesis in their new building and how he perhaps wasn't blessing us in our building. Well, you know what happened, don't you? Ian Charles Alexander Whitfield, stop doing that. That's what I heard the Lord say. This is the verse that he brought me to. If it's my will that such and such happened with Genesis, what is that to you? You follow me at Hope Christian Church. That settled the matter for me. It was wonderful. I've been sitting in this text. I got it. Ian Charles Alexander Whitfield, stop doing that. I stopped doing that, went back to sleep, and I remain in a posture of genuine, authentic celebration for what God is doing at Genesis. Jesus says, you follow me, you follow me. Don't worry about what I'm doing in someone else's life. You follow me. Why are we going to follow him? Because we love him. There's no other foundation by which we will genuinely follow him. And why do we love him? Well, there could be a whole sermon on that topic alone, but it's exactly what Edwin said at the beginning of the service. I didn't ask him to. For what he has done, for who he is, for what he has done, and for what he's going to do. That's why we love him. Now, how do we get to love him more than we do today? By living in relationship with him intentionally. That's how we get to know him better, and we love him better. If we live our lives ignoring him, we won't get to know him better, and we won't get to love him more deeply. But if we get up every day, and everything that we do is looked at through the prism of relationship with Jesus, if we pay attention to what he's doing in our lives, men, remember those of you who are on the retreat, what is God initiating in my heart, and how am I responding? It's that same notion. We get up every day, and we look for Jesus in our lives, in the good times, the bad times, the struggles. We see Jesus at work, and we respond in cooperation. And we discover something. We discover that he loves us more than we ever imagined. And we appreciate his love for us more and more. And the nature of relationship is that engenders within us a greater and greater love for him. Do we really need to love Jesus? Yeah, that's the key underpinning of this narrative. I hope you've been able to see that. I think this is such a fitting conclusion to the Gospel of John. You may remember that the whole purpose of this gospel is given in the preceding chapter, chapter 20, which we probably did 4 or 5 months ago. I can't recall. John chapter 20, verse 30 says this. Now, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. Direct parallel to what we'll read in a moment, and just wrote at the very, very end of John. But these are written so that what? So that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. And John concludes his gospel with parallel verses. He was a witness. What he's saying is set out of a witness. He's not making this up. This is what he saw and experienced. And then he says out of that witness, I've written a few things down, but there are many other things that Jesus did. And then he just sort of exaggerates into a statement that says, were every one of them to be written, I suppose the whole world itself could not contain the books that could be written. John was a disciple whom Jesus loved. John was a disciple who loved Jesus greatly. And John wants us to know and believe who Jesus is, and he wants us to love Jesus. And this story that concludes the gospel is not just about Peter, is it? It's a reminder that he knows our names, our unique names, and he calls us by name to answer the question, do we love him? The second thing is, he has things that he wants us to do. The third thing is that he wants us to individually follow him as his disciples. And the fourth thing is that he wants us to follow him without getting all bound up in what he's asking other disciples to do. You get that? He knows us by name, Simon, son of John. Do you love me? Is the question he asks every one of us. Number two, he has things he wants us to do. He commissions us to do work in the kingdom. Number three, he wants us to follow individually, to have an express mandate given to us individually and to do that. And the fourth thing is he wants us to do that without looking over our shoulder at what he's asked another to do in Jesus' name. Now I want to conclude this morning by telling you about a real event that happened this week. I've been sitting within this message reflecting on what it said for several days, and I had a very long breakfast meeting with a good friend of mine. And at one point, this man told me a long series of things which has to do with the ministry that he's been called to. Had extremely difficult environment, very many handicaps in his own life, and with much weakness. And I listened for a long time at one point. He was just speaking, and I was just enjoying, in a sense, just giving the gift of listening. I just listened to him. And as I began to pray, what's going on here, God? What's this about? I began to receive back the theme of today's message. I began to wonder, what would happen if I asked him, why do you do this? I mean, it's so difficult, this working in the name of Jesus. Why? At such personal cost, would you be motivated to do this? And then I began to wonder if I should actually ask him. And so when he'd finally finished speaking, it was clear he was done. I paused for a moment, and then I just asked him that question. Why do you do this? And without taking a breath, without a second's hesitation, he blurted out, because I love him, Ian, because I love him. And I was grateful to God that he gave me a specific anecdote. I could not possibly have manufactured that. Imagine listening to someone for 15 or 20 minutes who's working for the Lord, having a very difficult time, and then questioned about his motivation. His answer is today's message. Because I love him. Because I love him. Why don't we bow our heads together and close our eyes for a few moments? And I want you to put yourself in Peter's role in the story this morning. Imagine you and Jesus are taking a stroll together on the beach. You're not going anywhere. He's just walking alongside you. Imagine Jesus asks you this simple question. I want you to use your full name. For me, it would be this: Ian Charles Alexander Whitfield, do you love me? Now you put your full name and allow those words to formulate in your mind. Do you love me? Jesus, to you uniquely. Should there be somebody here today who cannot answer yes to that and would like to, if you'd like to come talk to me or email me, somehow connect with me, I'd love to talk some more with you about what it means to love Jesus. But if you are able to say this morning that you love him, I want you to sit with the following questions. What has Jesus asked you to do for him? How has Jesus asked you to follow him? Will you follow him into that calling more deeply this week out of your love for him? I'd like to use the prayer out of Ephesians 3 that Paul recites as a form of request in our closing. Worship team, please come up. For this reason, I kneel before the Father, from whom every family in heaven and on earth derives its name. I pray that out of his glorious riches he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. And I pray that you, being rooted and established in love, may have power together with all the Lord's holy people to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ, and to know this love that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. Amen.